I'll be starting in about a few more seconds. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, the law office of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. Today is November 22nd, 2012. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you. I will proceed as we usually do. I will proceed to first answer the questions that have been posted, then any follow-ups on the questions that have been posted, and then we will answer any new questions or any questions other than what has been posted and responded to. Do note, this call is being recorded, so if you folks do not wish your voice to be recorded, you may not speak up. And if you do speak up, you may want to maintain your identity confidential. Make up a name if you are asking a question. Tom, Sam, Harry, doesn't matter. I suggest you do that because the call will be made publicly available, as most of you know, and so other people are going to be able to hear about your details. With that said, let me get started with the first question that has been posted on the forums from Need Emmy, EAD-related questions. Well, you have a bunch of questions related to AC-21. So what I did was, if you look at the bottom of our threads, the first two questions I have answered right here, and I have given you some links right here. I've said that I have a lot of material on my blog about AC-21. Please read and watch the material I'm pointing out for you. So read these links and watch these links, and I have also done that for the second question. I've given you a video to watch which pretty much covers everything you have asked me. Okay? I will summarize anyway, but do read and view these videos. So the first question was, is it safe to use EAD when I'm doing an AC-21 portability? And the answer is, I prefer people do their H-1. I've given my reasons when you listen to the audio-video material as well as read. Does the title have to be exactly same? No, but it has to be similar. The law uses the words same or similar. So obviously, when you use the word similar, it means something less than same. But if it is too far less than same, then it's not similar. So anything less than same becomes a judgment call. Therefore, I always advise people, if you are going to use AC-21, have your lawyers review the two jobs, the one that was the green card job and the one you will take, very carefully. What is the probability of issues during the 485 approvals? AC-21, I do not believe, increases the chances of any issues if it is done right. Okay. What is the safest approach? Do an H-1B? Yes, I think you should do an H-1B. If the new employer does the H-1B transfer with AC-21, if I don't get the green card before my H-1B expires, can my new employer apply for H-1B extension based on my old employer's I-140? Yes. So even though employer number one did your I-140, employer number two can get H-1 extension based upon the employer number one's I-140 approval. Okay. So I don't see any problem there. You had some questions about titles being same or similar. I think more than the title, I would want to have your lawyers take a look at the job description. Those, I think, are extremely important. Okay. Next question was, can green card holders stay in India for 11 months without applying for reentry permit? And I have indicated to you that at the bottom of this forum thread where you posted this, I have given you, in response to your question, a link to a video that talks about how to maintain your green card. That pretty much answers all the questions you have. Okay? So, by the way, will the period that they have already spent in USA be counted towards citizenship if they stay in India for 11 months? Yes. Yes. That period does not get taken away. Next question is from Indira123, who's asking, is it possible to adopt my niece, who is not an orphan under U.S. laws? Will there be any immigration issues? Shall I go ahead and opt in India and then process the relevant forms? Is home study required? Well, home study is required whether you go through an agency or not. You have to look at the Hague Convention procedures. It is not something you want to undertake lightly. Make sure you do your homework. I do not know the answers off the top of my head. From what I remember, I do recall that there were some special processes that were to be put into place for relative children. I don't remember off the top of my head, unfortunately, Indraji. But do look into it, and I think ultimately it is a good idea to get a lawyer slash adoption agency involved, because it does make things a little easier for you. Adoption agencies can make things easier on the Indian side as well as the American side. So I think it's a good idea anyway. Okay. Sorry, I can't give you any more information than this, but this is all I remember off the top of my head. One that is worth looking into, I think it can be done. But before you do any adoptions or anything, please have a consultation with a lawyer who looks at the law and gives you details about what is involved here. You might also be able to find the Hague Convention law on the adoption website we have on the Indian side. So you should be able to find Hague Convention law and all the procedures that have already been implemented. I remember looking at the website, and it looked pretty comprehensive to me. Most of my questions or any questions asked by our clients were answered about the Indian side of the formalities. Okay? By the way, Hague Convention is an international convention under which adoptions are governed, and India and USA both are members of that convention. So India recently adopted that about a year, year and a half ago, I think, maybe 2 years ago. So it's a good idea to look at that, because all Indian adoptions will be done pursuant to the Hague Convention procedures. Okay. Next question is from A. Agar, who wants to know, I've got an H-1B approval. On the H-1B approval, which is I-797B, it says, if any of the workers included in this petition do not actually enter the United States and substitutions of different workers are not made, et cetera, et cetera. So he wants to know, could you please explain what this means? Well, first of all, this particular line does not apply to H-1B cases. It does not. It is for H-2 cases, because the same notice is used for a number of different types of visas. Sometimes it can get quite confusing to understand that one part of the notice does not apply to you at all. So question number two is moot, because it doesn't apply to H-1B. You cannot substitute beneficiaries on H-1B cases. Okay? If the petitioner cancels my visa, can I still get the visa ported to other employer? In my opinion, yes. Okay. So, yeah, and you have looked at the law. Very good. You have looked at the law, and it says you were not clear if these things apply to H-2B, and the answer is yes, they do. So let me confirm that for you. Also, I want you to, just for your information, many years ago, we used to be able to do something called blanket H-1Bs, so where we were able to put a lot of people on the same petition. That has changed. Now we cannot do blanket. So this particular part where substitution of beneficiaries is mentioned is not applicable to H-1Bs. You can completely ignore it. So the next question is, if I've got an F-2 and an H-1B, and I want to enter USA temporarily on F-2, can I do that and later on convert back to H-1B? The answer is probably yes. Probably yes. Because if the visas are not canceled, they are both valid. Okay? So to enter USA on F-2 visa should not be illegal. I am concerned because remember that CBP has a lot of power. CBP is the agency, Customs and Border Protection, that interviews you at the airport. They could deny entry on F-2 if you have an H-1B visa stamping saying that entry on F-2 is inappropriate because you intend to work in the U.S., even though you say, look, I'm not going to join work right now. So it leaves certain things to their discretion, whether they want to allow you entry on F-2 or not. But legally, I don't see any reason why you cannot do that. As a matter of discretion, you could be stopped. But as a matter of law, I don't see anything that says you cannot use an F-2 for a brief visit when you want to come back on H-1B at a little later point in time. Okay. What paperwork will be needed to travel in F-2? Basically, anything that proves that your visit is temporary and you want to come back for H-1B a little later. You can get a letter from your current company stating that they, at your request, they have moved your joining date to XYZ date, whatever that date is. Does traveling on F-2 cancel my H-1B visa? It should not. It should not. But CBP, like I said, does have substantial latitude in these cases. So I would just worry about that part. I'm not sure there is anything we can do to preempt or to prepare for a CBP officer's viewing this situation in a manner which we cannot foresee. So worrying about that part, and a logical follow-up question is, what if they don't let me enter? Well, that means you have to fly back to India from there. The worst-case scenario is they can actually bar you from entering USA for 5 years, but they don't do that in these kind of cases. They'll do that only if you're trying to commit fraud. Okay? I would be very surprised if they try to bar you for 5 years for something like this. Whatever you're doing appears to be perfectly legal to me. Somebody must have sent a question to Monica, and she has posted this. Monica is our administrator. My case is I'm presently here in USA with H-1B, valid till 2013. I've got an I-20 from two renowned universities for spring 2013. Spring session will start from Jan, and I could not apply for H-1B to F-1 change of status. Now I guess I'll face a situation when I have to start the class when the COS is still pending. Well, you know, you can check with your school, but what happens is F-1 is one of those few visas where you can start your school even while the change of status is pending. Okay. So double check, but you should be able to start school even when COS is pending. This is one of the few situations in which even though the visa is not approved, you can start the activity contemplated by that visa status. Our next question is a problem with N-400, which has been pending for almost 1 year, it looks like, for background checks. What do I do? Well, other than doing what you've already done, which is the senator's office, you can try next the ombudsman's office. Ombudsman. O, M as in Mary, B as in boy, U, D as in doctor, S as in Sam, M as in Mary, A as in apple, N as in Nancy. Ombudsman. So if you just type in Google or one of the search engines, USCIS space ombudsman, you should be able to pull it out. You can open a trouble ticket with them. And they can also follow it up for you. After that, the only option you have is a lawsuit. And lawsuits I usually don't like for a number of reasons. First, remember, lawsuits for delays are disfavored by courts, okay? Because courts say, look, we are the judiciary. We are here to interpret and apply the laws. It is not our job as judges to run the government. So we can't tell the government what case should be decided in what time. So time-based cases are usually disfavored. Not always, but I'm just giving you some idea. And secondly, you'll be filing for something like this, a writ of mandamus, which means, Mr. Government, you have a non-discretionary duty to decide my case. So decide it. Now, remember, a lawsuit does not guarantee you a favorable or an approval decision. It only gets you a decision, whether yes or no. So just keep these things in mind. Also, depending upon where you are located, whether you are located in a region or an area that is where the judges are more likely to get the government to comply with certain deadlines, or whether you are located in an area where judges are not going to interfere with the government, you may want to have that looked at. I think ombudsman is the next logical choice, but filing a lawsuit is the end option. If nothing else can be done, then you file a lawsuit. I usually avoid that option as much as possible. We have an interesting question from Avra Banerjee wants to know, I was on on L1B in US for about 5 years. Then I went to India. Now, almost a year later, by the way, I also got a sixth year of H1. I'm assuming they must have applied for your H1 about 6 months before your fifth year of L1B was over. So the question is, if I'm outside USA for more than 1 year, even though I've got 1 year H1B, do I get my 6 years of H1B back? And the answer is probably yes. It's a very interesting situation. I'm not sure there's any law that addresses the situation exactly, because on the one hand, there should not be any doubt that once you are outside, here's what we do know. Once you're outside USA, you get 6 years of H1 back. No question. That we know. Okay. But are you going to be subject to the quota? That's the tricky question. I don't know the answer to that question. You should not be, because you already have an approved H1B. And this situation is a very strange situation. I really don't know if there is an answer anywhere possible to this. Practical matter, what should you do? Use the H1B that you have for 1 year, but if you want to be more secure, apply for an H1B extension before you come into USA and see how that works out. Okay? Personally, I would just use the H1B and come into USA and apply for extension from here. Let's see how that plays out. Okay. Next question is a bunch of issues on AC-21, but it's a little bit of a twist. Here, the AC-21 is needed for the same employer, but they have changed their address from Illinois to New Jersey. The question is, if I've got an I-140 approved and a 485 pending through the employer, and they move their location 1,000 miles or 600 or 500 miles away, can I use an AC-21 to port with the same employer? And the answer is, as far as I know, yes. As far as I know, yes. Because we have used AC-21 many times in cases where the employers, a part of the employer was sold or taken over by a new employer. In many ways, that's like a successor in interest, or may not be. So it's almost like a self AC-21. And the answer is, so far, I do not believe there is a problem with this scenario. You should be able to use AC-21, but you've got to have same or similar job description. Okay? So, of course, I would want your employers to double-check this, but I'm pretty sure that's the way it would work out. Okay? Lincoln123 wants to know, I'm on H4. Because my passport was valid for less than the time I entered, they gave me I-94 till August 2013 instead of May 2015, which was the original. So, do I need to get a new I-94 after August 2013? And my answer is, please do. Please do. Okay? Even though there are suggestions, again, remember, there's nothing concrete as far as I know, there are suggestions from USCIS that if you have a I-94 that was originally valid till 2015, then you entered USA and for whatever reason you got an I-94 till 2013, we will honor the 2015 I-94 if necessary. But, you know, I'm very leery of these suggestions because this is such an important matter. Remember, if you stay on after 2013 for 180 days and USCIS does not accept the other I-94, which is valid till 2015, the old one, you could be subject to 3-year bar from entering USA. And if you continue to stay 1 year after 2013, you could be subject to 10-year bar. Why take a chance like that? Okay? So it's easy enough for you to just travel outside and re-enter using the visa, which would be probably still valid till 2015. They'll give you an I-94 upon re-entry, which will be valid till 2015. Venkat wants to know, his perm has been denied, and 6 years on H-1B are over. So there's in between some time during which he can go on H-4, and then based upon the 1-year pendency of the labor cert appeal, he will get an H-1B extension. So the point is, my perm has been denied. 1 year is not yet over. I will go on H-4 for a little while. The appeal will be filed against the denial. And then once the 1 year of labor cert filing is approached, I will file H-1B back from H-4 to H-1. So number one question, any risk of applying new perm with the same employer on EB-2? Complex, problematic area. Why? Because Department of Labor does not want you to file for a repeat perm while a perm appeal is pending. This makes the situation quite tricky. Remember, the law uses the words that an employee cannot, or an employer cannot file for the same job, for the same individual, for the same geographical area for which an appeal is pending. But what if you file for a different job? How does that play out? That has its own problems. It's not an easy question to get into an answer, but if you did not have an appeal or a six-year issue, the fact that you're filing an H-1, filing a perm again, where the previous perm was denied for a minor reason, it is a minor reason in some ways because it's just a mistake made in the office of the counsel. It's not really anything majorly wrong with the case itself. So it's a little complicated for me to comment authoritatively with the pending appeal, but if the appeal was not an issue and H-1B extension was not an issue, filing of the new perm is no problem at all. Okay? If I get back on H-1B status in Feb 2013 and if I file a new perm, what happens if I run into any delays with the new perm and it exceeds 365 days? So what you're asking me is that, let us say I file a new perm and withdraw my appeal. Now, my new perm was filed today, but what if before 12 months period is reached, that perm runs into any trouble or the I-140 gets denied or something? Now I'm less than 365 days into the process. How do I get another H-1 extension? Well, first of all, an appeal can again be filed, whether it is perm or I-140. Both appeals will give you the option of keep extending your H-1 beyond 6 years. Let me collect my thoughts for a second. So, next H-1B expires in Feb 20. Okay, yeah, and if there is a gap between the 12-month anniversary and your H-1 getting over, you can convert to H-4 again for those few days. That's perfectly legal, like you were thinking of doing before. Next question is, advantage of filing next H-1B extension and new perm through another consulting company? You should. You should look into that definitely, because if you leave this appeal pending and you file a perm through another company, then you get the best of the two worlds. You got another green card going, and because of this perm appeal pending, you can keep getting H-1 extensions with that other employer, even though the perm was filed by this employer. So it is not required that the extension and the appeal must be with the same employer. I think that's the better way to go. When should we take the appeal if I file new perm with the same employer? This is a tough one to answer. It should be timed perfectly so that it doesn't interfere with your H-1 extensions. Remember, an H-1 extension can be filed 6 months ahead of time. So let's say you've got 12 months of H-1 extension based upon the appeal pending. In the sixth month, you apply for your H-1 extension, do a premium processing. Now, if you withdraw the pending appeal, you've got 6 months to file the next application. So it's going to be timed right, okay? Just keep this principle in mind. Can I file next H-1B extension through another employer? And the answer is yes. And the last question we have today that has been posted is from Suchi 123, my H-1 visa will max out Feb 2013. Perm is filed on October 29th, 2012, and still pending. Okay. Do you see any chances of perm I-140 approval and extension can be filed it's impossible for me to answer that question, Suchi. There are so many things that can go wrong with the perm application. What if it goes into an audit? What if it gets denied? So many things that can go wrong. It's very difficult for me to predict. And your lawyer told you there's a 10-day grace period. That's incorrect. That doesn't make sense. I'll tell you how. First of all, once the H-1B is over, 6 years are over, there is a 10-day grace period to leave the United States. To that extent, it is correct. In that 10 days, can you file for an extension? You can try. There is no clear ruling from the government on this, whether those 10 days can be used. It used to be in doubt also on F-1 cases for the last 60-day grace period they had. There, the government has made it clear that you can use those 60 days to file for an extension or a change of status. I guess you could make the same argument in your case that I should be allowed the 10-day grace period. But remember one thing. The 10-day grace period is only available at the end of the 6 years of H-1. It is not available if somebody gets laid off. It is not available if somebody changes jobs if somebody's first 3 years of H-1 are expiring. So that 10-day is appended to the end of the 6 years. Many times, also make a note of this, many times USCIS, when they issue the last H-1, they add the 10 days to the I-94. So just keep an eye out on that. It's been some very strange and inconsistent practice from USCIS on this issue. Okay, I am done answering the questions that were posted. Let us begin by answering any follow-up questions people have on the issues that we have discussed. Please press 5-star on your phone if you have follow-up questions. 5-star. Okay, let's see how many we've got. Let me pull the other machine up. 1, 2, 3, 4 questions. 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah. Let me start in the order people called into the conference. Area code 713, go ahead, please.
Hey, Raji, sir. Very thank you for conducting this call. It's very useful for the community. We really appreciate your effort on this.
My pleasure.
All right, and coming to my question, and I'm currently on my H-1, and my 485 is pending, I got my EAD 6 months back.
One second, sir. Let me interrupt you. Are you asking a question that is follow-up on what we are discussing, or is it a new question?
Exactly. It's a follow-up question.
Okay.
Need me?
Right. I got that. First two questions.
Yes. So I'm on my H-1, and my 485 is pending. I got my EAD 6 months back.
Right.
Now, I'm planning to change the employer. And the old employer applied my green card under EB2 category.
Right.
And in the job description, he clearly mentioned.
Sir, I have already read your question. I know the facts, and I have already answered your question. Were you on the call when I answered the question?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but the question is like the old job description, it clearly says 5 years of experience needed, and the new job, it says 3+ years are required. So if I do a portability AC21, is that going to affect the
To know the answer to that question. It has never come up before USCIS. The problem is the AC21 laws have no regulations so far. So you're an IT guy. Think of it this way. We have the law, which is like high-level design, but we don't have the code, which is the regulation. So it is very difficult to assess the capabilities or detailed capabilities or the detailed law when you don't have regulations. Okay? I can make a guess. I think it will be okay, but you should be careful in how you present this information to the government. Please make sure you talk with your lawyers and let them decide what is the best way to approach this case.
Okay.
Overall, the jobs are required to be similar but not same. That's the best I can tell.
Okay, so do they just really depend on the count of the number of years experience? Like the old job, it clearly said 5 years of experience, and the new one says the minimum 3+ of years experience. That the number makes any difference here?
First of all, 3+, what does that mean? 4 years. What is 3+? 3+ is 4, right?
Exactly, yes.
If somebody says minimum 3+ is required, doesn't that make it 4? And the answer is yes, it does. So the question is 4 years experience or 5 years experience similar? I would say yes. Can they take away EB2? I don't know the answer to that question. I hope not. I think there is some argument on both sides. One argument is that AC21 was promulgated to protect people like you who were having problems because of so much delay in I-485 processing. So things like this should not be construed against you, and nobody should touch your EB2. But the government could claim, well, if you look at the statute, it says EB2 is only available for jobs that require at least bachelor's plus 5 years of progressively responsible post-bachelor's experience. So ideally, I would want to avoid this situation. If I cannot avoid it, I would ask the new employer, do you have any position that definitely requires at least 5 years of experience? Give me that position. Have that assessed by the lawyers. Make sure they are substantially similar. Go for it.
Okay. Right, thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Area code 203. Go ahead, please.
Hello, sir.
Yes. Good afternoon, ma'am.
Yeah. Mine is the last question. So, 3123.
Right.
Yeah. So my old employer had filed my labor 365 days before. So I wanted to use that to get 1 year extension. But when I spoke to them, they told that they have already informed the labor department that I'm no longer employed by them. So now can I use that?
No. If they are withdrawing your application, if your form is withdrawn, which is what I think they are saying, then you can no longer use that to extend your H1.
Okay. And one more question is, if I stay for 10 more days after my visa is expired, I'm not counted to illegal, right?
Make sure that your I-94 is the same duration as your approval notice. Okay. Sometimes what will happen is approval notice is only till January 1st, but I-94 is January 11th.
Okay. So, but mine is both the same date.
If they are both the same date, and if it is the end of your 6 years, you do have 10 days of legal status to leave U.S.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck. Okay, we have 4 more hands up. Let's go to 347. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Rajiv. This is BSAC. Question number 10.
Number 10. Okay, 1 second.
Regarding the employer who filed the labor and 140 moving from Illinois
change
to
of address. Yes.
So in this case, if I'm close to the priority date, maybe in a couple of months. So at that point, if they ask a employment verification letter, and if the employer issues with a new address, would that be an issue? Or
well, I already made that clear. In my view, an AC-21 should be available for you. And the proper response to a request for confirmation of employment is a letter with the correct recent address, also verifying that the two jobs are substantially similar. AC-21 should be applicable and should be available. Have your lawyers double check. But, of course, you cannot give them a letter with the old address.
Right. I understand. But even when giving the new employment verification letter, the case for AC-21 should be given along with that one.
It can be mentioned in the same letter.
Oh, okay.
Because remember, for AC-21, there is no particular formality. There's no form. It's basically just a letter.
Okay. And one quick question regarding the, say if I am planning to move to a third new company and using the AC-21, should these, I have an EB-3 and a EB-2 labor and 140, both are approved, right? So should I be using the job description from the EB-3 labor or the EB-2 labor?
Obviously EB-2 labor because you want EB-2, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, EB-2 labor. Because what you're saying is that I've got a job similar to my EB-2 job, so give me my EB-2, and the priority date is available to you whichever is the earliest, even though it is EB-3. So the priority date from EB-3 and the job description from EB-2 will be yours. Therefore, you want to use EB-2 AC-21.
Okay. And also, see, my it doesn't matter the I-485 when it was filed. It had the EB-3, and now I have filed the interfiling.
No,
does it matter
no
for the AC-21?
No problem. It should not matter.
Oh, okay, sir.
When was your I-140 approved for EB-2?
In last May, this May, 2012 May.
No problem. I don't see any issue.
Okay. Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
Yeah, let me just count the 180 days. So May of 2012 or 2011?
2012.
So May, June, July, August, September, October, November. 180 days are almost there or already over, right? So we are okay.
Right, yes.
We are okay.
Okay.
All right?
That should be. Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Good luck.
Good. Thanks.
Okay. We have 1, 2, 3, 4 still up. Area code 408. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Amit. I don't have a question posted, so should I wait? Because
I'm
I have
to ask you to wait. I'll get back with you, okay? Just sit tight. I'll get back with you.
Thank you.
Let me go on to the next one. Area code 857.
Hi. Thank you, Rajiv, for your help. So my question was the one that Monica posted. It was basically, you answered that there should not be issue to start with the study, even if the F1 is pending. But my concern was, what happens if I start studying and F1 gets denied? Would I be able to continue the study with some motion application or something like that?
No, you cannot. If the F1 change of denied, you have to quit school and leave USA.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
One more thing you can look at is this. Instead of applying for change of status, you can go outside and try to get an F1 visa stamp. Okay?
Okay.
If visa
a fresh application, right?
I'm sorry?
A fresh F1 application from outside US in that case.
Right. Instead of applying for I-539 change of status, you will take your I-20 and just go to a consulate, apply for visa stamping of F-1. And that way you know within a couple of days whether you're going to get F-1 or not.
Okay. Okay. I get it.
Good luck.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay. Last amongst the posted questions. Area code 734. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Venkat, and question is number 12.
Yes, Venkatji.
You mentioned there is a risk for the same employer filing for a new firm for the same job.
It's very messy, Venkat. It's very messy when you are applying for a labor cert through the same employer while an appeal is pending.
Sure. So I was wondering if we can do this. You know, based on the appeal, I'll apply for the H-1B2 for start date in, say, 2013. And in the meanwhile, we prepare for all the perm process. And let's say if I get the approval in January 2013 for the H-1B, can I take the appeal back after I got the H-1B approval and then file the new form in, let's say, in February or March 2013?
Yes, you can. Here's another principle to keep in mind. One principle I told you, H-1 can be applied 6 months ahead of time. Second principle is, once H-1 is given, even if you withdraw the appeal, it is not taken back by the government.
Once H-1 is given, once they withdraw the appeal, they cannot take the H-1 back, right?
Yes. If they have given you the H-1, even though
yep.
the appeal is gone, they will not take back what they've already given you.
Okay.
That's the second
principle.
Third principle, also important for you, is for perm, the ads are only valid for 6 months.
Right. Okay.
What you do is you time it in such a way you've got your H-1 well in hand. 6 months into it, you are ready to file the new perm, and you have applied for another H-1 extension. As soon as you get the extension, you withdraw the old perm appeal and you file the new perm. So timing has to be adjusted.
Okay. And because we applied the perm with the same employer, is it possible for an audit again on ED2 because I'll be using the same master's plus 3 years experience?
That's not my problem, because what I told you in the beginning was, when I answered this question, I said, just because you are refiling the same application does not increase your problem.
Okay.
Refiling, if that was the only issue, does not increase your problem, because the reason for denial was it's a typo reason. It's not a reason that, it's not something that's wrong with the labor search in a major way. So,
right.
In my view, that's not a problem. Filing for the same employer again is not a problem.
Okay. And this is my last question. Let's say if my employer has a new sister company, but there are no revenues on that yet. Is it okay to file the new perm with that company instead
that
of?
Becomes
you know,
another issue. That becomes another issue, ability to pay wages. So that's another issue. If the ability to pay wages issue is covered, then filing through a sister company is fine. All the government cares for is that the tax ID number of the two employers is different.
So based on for the wages issue, I can transfer my H-1B to the new company, right?
I cannot comment about that, Venkat. The answer is theoretically yes. All I can do is point you in that direction, because somebody has to sit down with you and look over the numbers and make sure the ability to pay wages issue is covered. If it is not, you will end up with an I-140 denial.
Okay.
So, yes. Theoretically, what you're thinking is perfectly possible.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. All right, folks. Anyone has any questions? I have two hands up already. You don't need to press again. Press 5-star, anyone who has any questions. Okay. So going back to in the order that you called in, I have a total of 3 questions left. So let's go to area code 408, new question. Go ahead, please, sir.
Yes, hi, Rajiv. This is Amit. So the question I have is regarding AC21, and I've watched your videos. I have a typical situation where my EAD, I've had the EAD for 6 months. I-485 is pending, and I am in a competitive hiring situation, and my employer is not willing to release the I-140 or the perm documents. My H-1B has expired, but it is pending extension. It expired on September 30th, and the extension was filed on June 7th of this year.
Okay.
So my question is, if I file an AC-21 and my EAD is expiring in March of 2013, and my current employer revokes my I-140, what could be the repercussions?
Amitji, even if the I-140 is revoked, AC-21 is unaffected.
So if my new employer files the AC-21 beforehand, I am secured?
You are as secure as anyone can be in the United States.
Okay. With the revocation of I-140, it the green card, the priority date, and everything is preserved. It's taken over by the new employer.
That is correct. The only exception to this rule, there are two exceptions to this rule. One, if I-140 is revoked for fraud. Okay.
Okay.
And second, if I-140 is revoked upon the ground that it was not approvable when filed. In other words, the government approved the I-140 by mistake. Two reasons only.
Okay. Okay. I've read in the blogs and I've heard in the videos, and you even mentioned today that the H-1B is always a good thing to have as a backup. In a situation like this, where the H-1B is pending extension from the current employer, can the new employer do anything about it before I start or after I start?
They should start a new H-1 anyway. Chances are that if you get the H-1 approval, in order to activate it, you'll have to go outside USA for a visa stamping. And you can do that at any time in future. You can start working on EAD, keep your H-1 approval from the new employer in your back pocket. Whenever you can, go to Canada, get your visa stamping. If they delay your visa, come back on advance parole.
Okay. In that case, the current, although my 6 years have lapsed on the current H-1B, actually I've used another 7th year based on the form filing. Will that matter in that case?
Does not matter.
Okay. one last thing about the AC-21. Is that just an informational procedure to USCIS, or is there an outcome to an AC-21 filing?
In other words, once you file, do you get any formal notification that your AC-21 is accepted, received, decided? The answer
yes.
No. None of the above. You don't even hear from the government. They don't tell you they've received the AC-21. They don't tell you they have agreed with it and they have accepted it. They don't tell you they have denied it.
Okay. The
only time you'll get something from them is if they intend to deny the 485. They'll issue a notice of intent to deny.
Okay. Can the AC-21 filed by the new employer before I start with them, or does it have to be after my start date?
No problem at all. I don't see any problem. I mean, a few days here and there is no problem.
Okay.
If it is going to be a few months, then you can mention in the AC-21 letter that start date is this decision. No law on this, but that's just common sense.
Okay. This one last thing on, so the new employer, basically, I don't know if this is a common practice or not, they've agreed to file the AC-21, but they've asked me to sign a waiver document in which if anything goes wrong, they are not responsible. Is that a common practice? I don't know if you know, but I'm just talking.
First time I've heard of it. We represent plenty of employers, corporate as well as individual.
First time you have heard of this?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah, because they have clearly outlined like 4 outcomes and they're like, we are not responsible for anything, and that is something scary to me.
It's not something that alarms me. I haven't looked at the language of it,
mm-hmm.
but it's not usual. No, it is not usual.
Okay.
Right?
Thank you very much, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Good luck, Amit.
Thank you.
Okay, last 3 questions, you guys. Area code 617. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is regarding the post number 6, which is for which talks about holding multiple visas at the same time.
Sure.
F2 and H1B together.
Mm-hmm, I remember. I've got the post. Yeah, go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, I know the post. What is?
Yeah, so I understand. Yeah, so I understand that what you have said is that I can enter on F2 and H1B as well. Both are valid, basically. But when I enter F2, the Border Protection Agency, they might have problems in the sense that if I have a H-1B and I intend to work, the intention of entering on F2 seems to be a problematic situation for me.
That's a good
right?
What I said, yes.
Right. would you recommend that I should not enter on F2, or should I, or can I just try entering on F2 and telling the visa officer that I have H1 and which is done recently, but my project has not started, and then I have some urgent situation over there, and then maybe I'll go back and then re-enter the country again on H1B whenever the work is there?
None of that is predictable. Let me ask you one question. How far ahead of your H1 start date do you want to enter U.S.?
How far ahead of what date?
Your H1 employment start date.
So my H1 employment start date is like, it has already been there, right? 28th of November or something was my employment start date.
So what is the reason you have not joined them yet?
So the project, like, you know, was never converted. Like, the way in which the company works is the statement of work will be signed and then I can only enter the country. But then the statement of work is never signed right now, and then the work that they were expecting that we have not got. So I cannot enter the same client or the same project.
Okay, I would be very reluctant to advise you to enter F2 simply because from what you have told me, it appears that the company filed for an H-1B and got an approval without a definite project in hand. That, according to USCIS, is misrepresentation. So be very careful with that problem. If a company applies for H-1B without a specific project in hand, they can be hauled up for fraud.
Okay?
So forget about it. Make your choice, either H-1 or F-2, and stick with it.
But like, you know, with the H-1B, I am not really sure, like, you know, when exactly will the project will get started or I'll enter the country, right?
Yeah, I just told you the problem. They should not have received the H-1B approval if the project was not already in hand. If there is some unforeseen issue, we can kind of try to explain. But this is a situation which the government knows quite well. And they frown upon it, they can take action on it. And you could be caught in the middle. Okay? If you don't have a project in hand, don't enter USA, they're tied. Don't use F2. They'll be asking you the same questions I'm asking you. Why are you not coming on H1?
Okay.
The moment you say, well, we don't have a project, they'll say, fine. Here's a 5-year bar because your employer committed fraud. Don't come back for 5 years. Well, can they make
okay.
it? No, but it just creates unnecessary complications for you. That's the way I see this.
So basically, like, I just keep on waiting on H-1B, or is it like there is a cooling off period after which I should enter the country?
You can just give up your H-1B and enter on F2.
How should I give up my H-1B?
You can just go back to the council, ask them to cancel the H-1B.
Okay.
That I'm not interested, they are not offering me a job. I want you to cancel my H-1 visa. So I can enter on my F-2.
So if I do that, then would I not be... then I will lose my H-1B also, right? I cannot transfer my H-1B to a new employer also, right?
You can probably do that still. I don't think that puts you back in the quota. But that's my guess. My guess is, if the H-1 visa is revoked, you still are exempt from H-1 quota.
Okay.
I got two more questions to attend to. Think this through. We can talk again in a couple
of minutes. All right. Thank you.
Good luck. Okay. Area code 734, please. Go ahead.
Rajiv, this is back to question number 12. I just wanted to get one thought about question number 2 that I posted. You know, if I get back on H-1B status in 2013 and if I file for the new firm in March, April 2013, and if we run into the same delays and if it exceeds 3 expiry days. So you mentioned I can go back to the H-4 and do the same thing again.
Yeah.
My attorney suggested one thing about this, like to file, that I can file an amendment in February 2013, basically which applies in August 2013, basically just changing a couple of things on the job profile, and I can file an amendment on this so I can get an extension from August 2013 to 2014 August. Is that something?
That makes absolutely no sense.
I'm sorry?
That makes absolutely no sense.
Okay. I'm not sure why he said that,
Only thing I can think of is this. Usually, when you have applied for an H-1B extension or transfer, you have an automatic grace period of continuing to work for 240 days. Okay.
Okay.
Does that also apply in amendments? I don't think so. And in any case, using that to fill a gap, which should remain a gap and not be covered by H-1, is illegal. I think any lawyer... and I'm not sure your lawyer suggested this, I'm making a guess. But if a lawyer says, oh, we can cover that gap by filing an amendment and you continue working, that's wrong. That's illegal. No lawyer should do that. That's unethical. You're trying to cheat.
So the gap I'm talking, it's actually not a gap because I will be on the extension from February 2013. So he's trying to make an amendment that will start from August 2013, basically changing some job description. So it's not the gap between H4 and the H1.
Okay, let me ask you to hold. Let me answer the last question, then I still have 2-3 minutes. I'll answer your question. I'll try to understand what you're saying. Give me one second. Let me answer the last question. I think it's from India. I don't want to keep them holding too long.
Sure.
There's a call from area code 91. I believe it looks like an Indian phone number. Go ahead. Go ahead. Are you calling from India? Area code 916.
Hello, Raju, sir. I am calling from Sacramento, California.
Okay. Well, your number is quite long.
916 is Sacramento, California code.
Oh, thank you. I thought it was India. That's 92.
Thank you, Raju, sir. Raju, sir, I had sent in email yesterday, and you said you will be answering my question. This is regarding...
You had that F1 issue, I remember. You had an issue where you were thinking of going to school, joining a school which agrees to offer you a CPT of 40 hours from first semester only, right?
That's right, Rajesh.
I don't like it. I don't like it because there are very few schools that should do that, and that too also in very select programs. If it's a graduate program where practical training is an integral part of the degree, and they have an agreement with employers in place that allows the school to take the work experience and convert that into school credits, it's got to be some very specific circumstances. There have been a lot of issues raised by USCIS, starting from Tri-Valley University in California, you must be aware of that, to Northern Virginia, college here, to Hurgoyne University more recently. So there's been questions raised against all these universities that were offering CPTs from day one, and that to a 40-hour CPT, that doesn't sound right to me.
So you would suggest me to come on F1 and not take the CPT or come on H4? What do you suggest?
I want to go to a university that is accredited. And if you want to figure out which universities are accredited, go to my blog. I have a video on how to figure out which university and what degrees are accredited. Okay?
Sure,
okay. Go to an accredited school. That would be much better for you.
Sure, Rajesh. And So if my I-140 get approved in the mid of 2013, so is it advisable to apply for H-1 immediately after
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. That's perfectly legal. You can get a 3-year H-1 extension right away.
Okay. Thank you, Raju,
sir. You're welcome, sir. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Okay. So now let me go back to this issue of the H-1. I'm not quite sure I follow it. All right, sir. Go ahead. Let's spend a couple of minutes trying to understand what your issue is. You said there is no gap in the H-1. What do you mean?
So basically my H-1 expires in December, right? In December 2012.
Hang on. Let's do it slowly. H-1 expires in December 2012.
December 15, 2012, right.
Okay. All right. So what are you thinking? Go on.
So we applied H-4 before December 15, 2012.
Good.
Based on the receipt number, we apply for H-1B extension, after, let's say, December 20th, 2012.
That's okay too, yes.
So with the start date of February 7th, 2013.
That's okay too, yes.
So I'll get an extension till February 7th, 2014.
That is correct, yes.
So in the meanwhile, we prepare for the new perm, and once I get the H-1B extension, let's say in January 2013 under premium processing, we take the denial back on the current perm. And
Let me stop you for a second. If your H-4 change of status is still pending, you will get an H-1 approval without I-94.
I'll get the H-1 approval without I-94.
I have to go for a visa study.
Oh, that is something new.
Yes. Write that down. Okay, keep on going. I want to just take one more minute. Go ahead. Tell me what they're saying.
So my thought is when we take the, once I get the H-1B approved in January 2013, and when we take the denial, we take the appeal back on the old perm, and we file the new perm maybe in February or March 2013.
Yeah, that's fine. So everything does not be any problem to me so far. You can do that combined with what I just told you. So all right. So where was the gap? What was the problem? I'm a little confused with that.
The problem is, let's say we file a new form in March 2013, and sure. if we get into the same delay again.
There could be again a 1-2 month gap where the form has not been filed for 12 months and the H-1 in hand is already expired.
Right. So to avoid the situation, what my attorney suggested is, once I get the approval for the H-1B in Feb 2013, I can file an amendment in August 2013 on the same H-1, basically changing some few job duties in
so
that.
Stop right there. That does not cover the gap. That's what bothers me, because trying to extend your H-1 to that extra 1-2 months to any device other than H-4 appears to be illegal and unethical. Okay, I don't see how you can, first of all, but if there is some way you're trying to pull a fast one on the government, it's not a good idea. Don't think about it. There is no way you can do anything with your H-1 to take it to cover that 1 or 2 month gap you have between H-1 expiring and the 12-month anniversary, or the 1-year anniversary of the perm application that you're filing again. No way to cover that gap. You'll have to go back to H-4.
So what happens if I change my employer in, let's say, April 2013 and file the new perm with them? I got the H-1B extension based on the old perm appeal, and we leave it in place like that. And let's say if I change my...
That's the thing to do. That's what I said. That's the best option, but that way you get the best of the two worlds. You have a secure way of keeping your H-1 extension while you've got your perm going with the second employer. Okay, I've got to go. There are people waiting for
Okay.
But yeah, that is the best way to do it. Okay?
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Good luck, sir.